Hi, this is Brian. Welcome to the Philosopher's Notes on Pressure, Lessons from the Psychology of the Penalty Shootout by Geyer Jordet. As always, let's kick it off with a quote. In this book, I will present the highlights of my research. I will dig deeply into the constituents of pressure, how it manifests in penalty shootouts, and describe and explain how the world's best, and some of the worst, penalty takers cope and maintain performance under some of the most extreme pressure conditions that exist in sport. However, the focus is not only on footballers and their penalty kicks, it is as much on the experience and management of stress itself. As we shall see, the way that successful penalty takers perform under pressure is not only about a physical act, a kick at a ball. To be perfectly honest, I am personally not even that interested in the penalty kick itself. What happens to the ball after the foot has struck it is not my primary focus. It is all about the pressure that is on before the kick, what players think and feel, what they do, how they relate to and communicate with others. This is where the magic happens, and this is where the broader lessons are. Not many of us will be asked to take a penalty for our country in a World Cup shootout, but all of us will face pressure of some kind in our lives. And maybe it would be useful to know what we can do to prepare ourselves, overcome our fear of failure, and survive and even thrive in those big pressure moments. End quote. Again, that is Geyer Jordet from Pressure. Pressure. We all feel it in various aspects of our lives, and few human beings feel it quite as acutely as a soccer player getting ready to take a penalty kick to win a World Cup, which is one of the reasons why this book is such a fascinating read. As per the subtitle, Geyer Jordet gives us lessons from the psychology of the penalty shootout. Now, the wisdom is based on his work as professor in psychology and football at the Norwegian School of Sports Sciences. Yes, you heard that right. Geyer is a professor in psychology and football at a university in Norway that is exclusively focused on sports sciences. Apparently, those Norwegians are serious about their football. That's awesome. Let's go. Geyer has served as the personal psychology advisor to over 130 professional players across all major European leagues and has worked with more than 60 professional teams. His specialty? You guessed it, penalty kicks. As per the front flap of the book, and I quote again, the penalty shootout is the most intense drama in sport. The anxious wait, the building dread, the lonely, heavy-legged walk towards the penalty spot. One kick while the world holds its breath. Even football's most casual observers cannot escape the nerve-wracking suspense. Geyer explores answers to these questions. What happens to a footballer's brain and body in these heart-pounding moments of pressure? Why do some thrive and others choke? When the game goes to penalties, what ultimately separates triumph from disaster? I got this book after working with some elite athletes and coaches in Europe. I can't remember which of the coaches referenced it, but they highly recommended it, so I immediately got it and read it in basically one sitting. It's fantastic. We got a link to get a copy in the note. It is, as always, packed with big ideas, and as always, I'm excited to share some of my favorites, so let's jump straight in. Little PS, check out Peak Performance 101 for some of my favorite big ideas on the subject of performing under pressure. And check out our notes on another book on the science of performing under pressure called Choke, What the Secrets of the Brain Reveal About Getting It Right When You Have To by Sion Bylock. PPS, check out this 2024 commencement address by tennis legend Roger Federer, which I linked to in the note. Fun fact, Federer gave that talk at Dartmouth, where Sion Bylock happens to be the president. First big idea, controlling the pressure. Quote, routines help performers concentrate more effectively on their tasks and channel their attention in those critical moments immediately prior to a performance. Studies show that having a distinct pre-performance routine minimizes distractions, increases one's feelings of control, and reduces anxiety. A meta-analysis of 61 studies with athletes from different sports concluded that pre-performance routines have a significant and robust effect on performance. The exact components of each player's routine are different. How they walk back, take up position, start the run up, the number of steps they take, whether they look at the ball or the goalkeeper. There is not necessarily one correct way to do it. What matters is that players feel comfortable with their individual routine, spend time in training and rehearsing it, polishing it, and making it robust. That is from chapter number 2, Controlling the Pressure. In chapter number 1, called Feeling the Pressure, Geyer walks us through the effects of pressure. Then he teaches us how to control the pressure. The key? In short, we need to create a clear protocol that we execute consistently. Martin Odegaard is one of Geyer's case studies. As you know, if you're a soccer fan, he is the captain for Premier League club Arsenal and the Norway national team. He's also a very good penalty kick taker. Geyer tells us, and I quote him again, a stable and steady pre-performance routine is a way to achieve more control in a high-pressure situation. There are countless ways to compose such a routine. Arsenal's Martin Odegaard was not initially a regular penalty taker, but started taking some kicks in 2023, both in penalty shootouts and in games. He shared with me how deliberate his behaviors are prior to penalties. I know how to place the ball on the penalty spot. I know what to do when I walk back. I take sufficient time, and I know what to do when I run up to the ball and what I think and focus on then. So that is all I focus on, really, and not much else. You don't know if the ball will go in or not, but until I strike the ball, I have a good grip on what to do. Geyer continues by saying, this clearly helps him to adopt a proper and productive mindset in these high-pressure situations. There's a sharp and focused feeling. I am concentrated. I only focus on what I am supposed to do. Geyer continues by saying, control is a critical part of this. I decide about the ball. I want to be the one who controls the situation and not let the situation take over. The thought behind all these things I do is that I want to control it, that I command the situation. He also explains that this is not something that just comes naturally. He works on it. I think you just have to find your zone and be comfortable with that. This is something I have trained so that I feel in the right zone, end quote. I repeat, rather than think about the outcomes of our performance, we want to focus on a process we can control that will allow us to maintain a tight focus on the task at hand such that we have the best shot, no pun intended, but I'll take it, at a successful result. Why is this important? Well, as Sion Bylock puts it in Choke, when athletes think about themselves screwing up, they are more likely to do so, end quote. Next big idea, the pause. Quote, can taking a pause before starting to execute one's task be used for coping with pressure outside of penalties in football? In September 2009, at a gathering called the Vancouver Peace Summit, there was a panel discussion with, among others, the Dalai Lama, four other Nobel laureates, and respected leaders in the fields of education, business, and social transformation. One of those was the German Eckhart Tolle, a well-known spiritual teacher and best-selling author. Tolle was asked by the moderator how creativity can arise from a mind that is not completely distorted by mental constructions. Tolle closed his eyes and took a pause. Who wouldn't when faced with such a question? And then, slightly to the surprise of the audience, started speaking about football. He confided that he had listened to a researcher on BBC World News saying that those penalty takers who take a 3 to 4 second break after the referee's whistle were more likely to score than those who immediately started running towards the ball. There was, he implied, a clear lesson. The audience laughed warmly, not least when Tolle added that he hadn't watched football in about 20 years. More seriously, Tolle characterizes this pause prior to a kick as stillness and a redirection of attention to within, to a deeper layer of being where all power resides. This is more concrete and functional than it may sound. Anyone, in or outside of sport, can benefit from this. A moment of stillness prior to starting any critical task, perhaps using conscious breathing, will make it easier to ground yourself emotionally, plan the appropriate strategy and direct attention to where it is most required. Parenthetical note that Geyer adds, the researchers watching penalty shootouts with a stopwatch are, of course, in limited supply. So the one Tolle had heard on the radio was me, if there was any doubt. End quote. The power of the pause. That's another big idea from the same chapter on controlling the pressure. Note, the key to controlling the pressure is to focus on what you can control. And, to state the obvious, pausing before taking action so you can ground yourself and tap into that stillness Tolle talks about is a very wise idea. We'll talk about some key elements of the pre-shot protocol in a moment. For now, here's a little passage from Tolle's The Power of Now, check out those notes, that captures the state we want to be in as we step up to the penalty kicks of our lives. Tolle tells us, if it is the quality of your consciousness at this moment that determines the future, then what is it that determines the quality of your consciousness? Your degree of presence. So the only place where true change can occur and where the past can be dissolved is the now. End quote. Next big idea, the breath. Quote, when Cristiano Ronaldo scored his decisive goal in the penalty shootout against England in the 2006 World Cup, not only did he pause for what was then an extraordinary length of time, almost 3 seconds after the whistle, he could also be seen taking 3 separate deep breaths. With each breath, his chest visibly inflated as he took air in, and the exhale was almost as forceful as some of his actions with the ball, his shoulders clearly dropping as his lungs emptied. Long and deep breaths can be a powerful pre-performance technique in all types of pressure situations. When tennis champ Novak Djokovic is asked about his mental strength, he immediately talks about his breath. There are different techniques. Conscious breathing is a big part, especially in the moments when you are under tension. The neurobiologist Andrew Huberman showed that a physiological sigh, 5 minutes of breathing where the exhale is twice as long as the inhale, had considerable effects on the amelioration of anxiety. End quote. Now that's from the very next section in the same chapter. The number one way to bring ourselves into this moment while slowing down our overactive mind so we can execute our task-oriented protocol? Focus on your breath. Geyer also tells us, diaphragmatic breathing, where the stomach, rather than the chest, moves with each breath, activates the parasympathetic nervous system, which induces relaxation. If one engages in more shallow upper chest breathing, one will get the opposite effect. The sympathetic nervous system will be activated, which will stimulate a fight-or-flight reaction. Thus, a good habit prior to a penalty kick or for an equivalent high-pressure situation is to take 3 or 4 deep breaths, breaths that are felt deep down in the belly. This can and should also be rehearsed away from the performance context. If your default breathing pattern is diaphragmatic, this will be a better foundation to fall back on when you are called upon to conduct deep breaths prior to performance under pressure, end quote. Now, this is one of the biggest things we focus on when Michael and I work with elite sports teams. We call it flip the switch. There are 3 components. 1, posture. 2, breath. 3, mental focus. The first step in flipping the switch, we assume the posture of a warrior, chest up, chin down. Then we take a deep breath, in through our nose, down into our belly, back out through our nose or pursed lips with an exhale slightly longer than our inhale. As Geyer tells us, this deep breath is the fastest way to activate our parasympathetic nervous system and reduce the negative effects of an overactive fight or flight response. And as Geyer tells us, if you want to be able to flip the switch in the moment it matters most, you better train that ability. The good news with our breath is that we can literally train it all day, every day. See Optimal Breathing 101 and our notes on Patrick McKeown's The Oxygen Advantage and Anxiety Free for more on why and how to train our breath. The third component of our heroic flip the switch protocol, we optimize our mental focus, which is exactly what Geyer tells us to focus on next. He uses Novak Djokovic to make his point. Quote, again, Novak Djokovic is an open advocate of mindfulness training and explains his approach as follows. I might appear to be locked in, but trust me, there is a storm inside. The biggest battle is within. You have doubts and fears. I feel it every single match. I don't like this mindset that I see a lot in sports. You know, just think positive thoughts. Be optimistic. There is no room for failure. There is no room for doubts. This is impossible. You are a human being. The difference between the biggest champions and the ones who struggle to get to the highest level is the ability to not stay in those emotions for too long. For me, it is relatively short. As soon as I experience it, I acknowledge it. I may burst or scream on court, whatever happens, but then I am able to bounce back and reset. As Geyer puts it, and I quote him again, unpleasant and unsettling emotions are natural when performing under pressure. But if you accept those emotions and the inevitability of their presence, you will spend less time trying to regulate them and more time focused on what is necessary to produce your performance, end quote. Next big idea, mental contrasting, quote, performers can compensate for the negative effects of distraction by investing more mental effort in the task. This becomes easier with experience. Training will help. More experienced performers are less stimulus-driven, where attention is drawn to what the other person is doing, and more goal-directed, where attention is maintained on the task you are trying to solve. If you have been frequently exposed to distractions from other people, you are more likely not to let such distractions get to you and stay focused on your task. In such situations, the performer needs to produce a clear and sharp focus on the upcoming task, while staying cognitively flexible enough to fluidly handle any distraction. It is much easier to resist the distractions provided by others if you have encountered and successfully coped with something similar before. Planning is important, not only for reducing practical and logistical errors, but also for the psychological benefit that arises from reducing uncertainty. Mental contrasting is a technique to deal with such chaos. In other words, imagining the goal that one wants to achieve in the future, and then imagining the specific path required to reach the goal with all the obstacles and challenges to solve along the way. This strategy is shown to be substantially more effective for goal attainment than only imagining the goal itself. End quote. That's from a chapter called Exploiting the Pressure, in which we learn deeper skills to channel the pressure into peak performance. One of the top recommendations, practice something called mental contrasting. Mental contrasting is why the WHOOP process that Gabrielle Oettingen describes in her great book, Rethinking Positive Thinking, works. You start with a vision of your ideal outcome, then you imagine all the things that might get in the way of making that vision a reality, then you figure out how you will overcome those challenges, then you train that. Check out the notes for more. One of my all-time favorite books, Rethinking Positive Thinking by Gabrielle Oettingen. If you haven't checked out those notes yet, get on it. Again, those notes are linked in this one. And here's how Heidi Grant Halvorsen, another leading scientist, puts it in her great book, Succeed. Check out those notes as well. She tells us, and I quote, "Then what is the best way to set goals so that you will reach them without getting stuck daydreaming? The optimal strategy to use when setting a goal seems to be to think positively about how it will be when you achieve your goal while thinking realistically about what it will take to get there." Oettingen refers to this as mental contrasting. First, you imagine attaining your goal, and then you reflect on the obstacles that stand in the way. If you want to get a high-paying job after college, start by imagining yourself accepting an offer at a top firm, and then think about what stands between you and that offer, namely all the other really outstanding candidates that will be applying for jobs. Kind of makes you want to send out a lot of applications, doesn't it? That's called feeling the necessity to act. It's a psychological state that is crucial for achieving your goal. Daydreaming about how great it will be to land that job or fall in love with that special someone you've had your eye on can be a lot of fun. but it won't get you anywhere. Mental contrasting turns wishes and daydreams into reality by bringing into focus what you will need to do to make it happen. All of which brings us to the next and final big idea, uniting against the pressure. Quote, after this, I had one more quote, which was accompanied by a video clip from the 2005 shootout. The other guys received me well when I came back to the group. The video clip showed everyone welcoming and embracing a player who had missed. I then said, we can do even better than this. Here's my suggestion. When one of us misses a shot, we all walk over to get that player back into the group again as soon as possible. The players listened, but nobody commented on it, so I had no idea if this was something that they were prepared to do. During that eventual 32-penalty shootout, several Dutch players missed. Every time, the whole group broke free from the center circle and walked over to get the returning player back into the group, making the longest walk shorter. They then ended up winning the shootout. Human beings have a fundamental need to belong. When we feel excluded, our body's alarm systems fire. Indeed, exclusion activated the same neural and physiological alarm system that is involved in threats of physical harm. In key moments of failure, such as having missed a penalty shot in a penalty shootout and let everyone on the team down, the sound of the alarm is almost deafening. In this situation, receiving genuine hints that people still care, that one is still valued and is still part of the group, can have a significant positive impact. End quote. Now that's from a chapter called Uniting Against the Pressure, in which Guyer walks us through the power of creating a sense of belonging and the best practices he developed to help teams respond to the inevitable failures players will experience during penalty kick shootouts. Now, I knew I would share this passage as a big idea after I read the book. I also knew it. I would encourage you to check out a plus one I did recently called Legendary Leadership, in which I share the story about how my friend John Herdman, coach of the Major League Soccer team Toronto FC, responded to a failure by one of his players. Short story, and check out the plus one for more. His goalie was tricked in the last seconds of a game. An opposing player snuck around behind him, stole the ball, and scored a goal. It was crazy. The goalkeeper was so bummed you could feel his pain. And right as the camera was showing his anguish, you see his coach, John Herdman, racing across the field to console him, letting him know he had his back. Then you see all his teammates doing the same thing. It was a really special moment. Got goosebumps saying that right now. Now, what I couldn't have predicted when I was reading the book was the fact that just a few days later, Emerson and I would be watching the Toronto FC game, and guess what happened? A penalty shootout. And of course, John's team executed all the best practices Guyer talks about, and they won. There's a little 3-minute highlight reel, which I linked to in the note, which is fun to watch. But it doesn't show the most important part, the players welcoming their teammates back after a missed shot. That's where championships are won, when everyone feels a sense of belonging. So here's to remembering that pressure is a privilege as we practice our philosophy and use those pressure-packed moments as opportunities to show the world all we've got. And that is a very quick look at a great book, Pressure, Lessons from the Psychology of the Penalty Shootout. Thank you, Guyer Jordet. Let's enjoy some quotes, and then we'll wrap it up. First one is from Ante Milicic, the head coach of the Australia women's team in 2019. He tells us, only big players can miss penalties because small players don't take them. Good thing to keep in mind. Guyer tells us, anxiety is a normal reaction in pressure situations. The question with respect to how it will impact performance is, how do you interpret it and what do you do with it? He tells us, studies show that when athletes are put in the same pressure situations, some will interpret it as threatening and negative, while others will interpret it as challenging and positive. Megan Rapinoe once said, something that has made me so successful in penalty kicks for so long is the realization and the acceptance that I will miss them. Goddard tells us, performance under pressure, we are strongly reminded, is not about being fearless and without discomfort. It is about acting despite fear and discomfort, acting directly in the face of those things. Dan Coyle tells us, our sense of belonging constantly needs to be fueled by signals of connection. Back to Geyer, who tells us, pressure training seems to work. It changes athletes' relationship to pressure. It enables them to think, yes, the pressure I am likely to experience in my role is uncomfortable, but it can be practiced for, adjusted to, and controlled. This means that this is vitally important for a team to cope with and recover from a miss. A miss is often just a temporary setback. What matters is how the team collectively responds to that setback. Geyer also tells us, the psychological game is more about accepting being vulnerable and exposed under this type of pressure, and then taking the necessary steps to cope with it and perform under it. This involves skill development, control strategies, teamwork, quality pressure training, and sensitive coach communication and support. And finally, Geyer tells us, this is something I have experienced so many times since. The ones who approach you after a presentation are nearly always the ones who are already the most proficient. They are very good, but they want to be better. This is the mindset of so many high achievers, end quote. Amen. The best want to get better. Had a very similar experience at the end of my most recent presentation to a group of elite athletes in Europe. Incredible guys, super engaged, and arguably the best performer in the room was the most engaged. We want to be coachable. We want to be curious. We want to be hungry. The best always want to get a little bit better. What was the idea that jumped out for you today? How can you take this wisdom, the lessons from the psychology of the penalty shootout, and apply it to your life circumstances in which you are feeling pressure? Think about that. Get on that. Make today a great day. Look forward to sharing more with you soon. See you.
We hope you enjoyed that philosopher's note. Go to heroic.us to download more.